If that answers your question sufficiently.
I have no idea what that means. You mean we have to come up with $34 million to balance this today?
In 20 years.
No, if you'd have to come up with $34 million a year for 20 years to pay off the entire thing in 20 years. Right now the liability is $350 million and you have zero.
So we need to come up with $34,575,000, yeah, so, round it up a little, in order to be able to balance this. We have to make 20 annual payments of that,
yeah,
in order
of
to
that,
balance
of
it.
Of something like that, yeah. So this, again, this is part of the GASB idea, where this is something that could be compared from municipality to municipality, and they have it on a percentage of pay basis below that. So to compare for bond ratings and things of that nature, which is, again, part of the function here.
It looks like, you know, a few pages before, you had mentioned what our OPEB liability was, for example, in 2014, and it was $246 million. And now, you know, assuming that we don't, if we use a discount rate of 3%, you're around $406 million, I think was one of your other numbers. If you don't use 3%, you can add $90 million to that, so you're at $496 million. If you don't figure out a compounded rate of return, not to mention that we're assuming that healthcare percentages costs are going to go down. If they don't go down, then we're well over $500 million. So at $34 million a year, that's our annual required contribution. That's what you're telling us we would need to pay it off in 20 years.
That would be a number, yeah, right. Based on a 20-year payout, that would be the...
Now, you don't look at what we can afford to pay. You're just telling us what we need to pay,
no,
right?
Okay, right. It's actuarially determined.
Right.
That's all. It's not required. And in fact, there was a term, actuarial required contribution, under the prior GASB statement, which was a misnomer for multiple reasons, because you certainly weren't required to make that. You didn't have to put anything in. And
yeah.
Warwick followed that approach.
So my question was, if you're telling us that this is what we would need to pay, you're not telling us that we can afford to pay it.
Agreed.
But with a maximum tax increase right now in the city of Warwick, we can only raise about $8.3 million. We're almost four times short. I would assume if we factor in the $90 million, we're well over four times short of what we need to put away with a maximum tax increase.
Right.
So this, just so we're all clear, because this is an education for everybody, including the public and employees too. Just so we're clear, this can't be fixed with revenue. And you're not giving any, you're just telling us what we're faced with. You're not telling us how to solve the problem in here, correct?
What my report is doing is presenting results to you of what the picture looks like.
Right.
Okay, which 10 years ago didn't exist. You know, it was just, you just paid and whatever. Now, let me share a couple of thoughts with you over what I've seen over the last, you know, number of years. First of all, my state, New York State, does not even have an option to pre-fund OPEB. It is prohibited in the state, okay? And I mean, I've seen plans with $2 billion liabilities, and all they can do is pay the pay-as-you-go. That's just part of New York statute, okay? Basically, this new GASB stuff, they don't allow a lot of trusts to begin with. Pensions, yes, but there are a lot of limits. So this one was just treated similarly, not like pension, but like everything else. Okay, so you're not alone in the realm of not being able to pre-fund, whether it's by statute or whether it's by, you know, money available. Okay.
Is this supposed to make us feel better?
Just that much.
Oh.
you're not alone. Okay. But what?
So
again,
the,
if I can just
yeah.
get to my
oh,
second,
yeah, sure.
I'll just get to my second point. That what I've seen over, you know, I've known this in New York for all this time, and I'm sitting there like, gee, I wonder why they haven't wanted to do this or whatever. And what I've, where I came out was saying, okay, listen, if they allow it, then I guess municipalities could just tax more if they, you know, conceivably. But the fact that they can't, where there's only one other place to go, and that's the design end, okay? And what I've seen over time is in my own state is that there is work at the design end to, you know, whether, you know, some plans collective bargain, some plans are not, or there's a mix. But I've seen work, you know, as far as negotiating on these collective, you know, bargaining agreements to try to get the retirees to have to contribute some or more toward their retirement at the end of the day. I know that Warwick is 100% funded by the city, the OPEB benefits, aside from maybe one small kicker or something. So, but I've seen that, and there's a couple ways I've seen going about it. And one way I've seen is that these unions have been willing to give up new hires to a degree. As far as OPEB, you know, saying, you know, okay, adding tiers. Okay, I think New York State's up to like tier 7 or 8 or something. So, but the idea being that, okay, if you're hired after such and such a date, this is what you have to do for OPEB, whatever it might be. Now, again, the union doesn't give that up for free either. So what they're saying, what they end up doing is they end up giving, okay, you got the current population and say, okay, well, if you give us this, then we'll give away that. And in the long run, it works out for the city. But that's how this can ultimately thin itself out to an extent. Again, these obligations that we're looking here, we're talking about payments that could be made 70 years out. Okay, we got active employees in this computation that conceivably will retire in 40 years and then could get paid for another 30. Okay, so this is a very long road. Okay, and one thing that, you know, to the extent, it's very hard to touch your current retired population. It's very difficult from what I understand. But in terms of current actives, again, even if you're dealing with a current active population, that current active population, in some instances, are willing to give up. They might say, okay, we're willing to pay X percent toward our OPEB if you give us something else. Okay, I've even seen that, you know, in certain instances. But something that's a bit easier sometimes is starting a new tier. The thing about what I just talked about is that that's an immediate impact. For example, if you have your active population, all of a sudden they agree, when we retire, we'll pay 10% toward it. You're reducing that number by 10%. Now again, the $350 million has both actives and retirees in it, but I don't have the breakout, but let's say that it was $150,000 for the actives and $200,000 for the retirees, just to give you a number. If the retirees are willing to pay 10%, 10% of 150 million is 15 million. Okay, so that would be an immediate reduction. Okay, and you'd feel the benefits of that going out. Under the other approach of just adding a tier, it would be new hires that you say, no, people that are hired later, they can pay 10% or 20%. And then, but then the union wants you to give something back. So there are some approaches, but I don't argue that these numbers are big. They're big numbers. And again, working from the design end, though, is an approach that I've always supported. And, you know, it could be both. You could do some pre-funding or do some from the design end, you know, supposedly. You know, that's what I've seen over time. But those are a couple of suggestions that are not visible in my accounting report.
So the tough part for all of us is at the end of the day, if I'm hearing you correct, you can't solve it with revenue. Obviously you can put revenue towards it, but that's not going to solve the problem. It's the design of the plans. And when you look at the design of the plans, I had asked one of your colleagues in 2012, are we at the point of no return? And your colleague said, yes, you can't fix this. So that begets my next question, which is, that's going to be a hell of a design to account for $500 million debt that we're looking at unique to Warwick. Not Gatsby 75, but no 3% COLA right now. I mean, 3% discount rate. We're looking at, and you know, I'm not going to assume that that healthcare rates are only going to increase at 5%. But are you capable, if this administration or this council asked you to assume that plan designs are going to change to X, Y, and Z, projecting out the impact to whether, you know, this, the goal is in the, with pensions and healthcare, obviously, is to have a plan that gets you back to zero, to make things equal, to pay all your debts in the future. After all, you don't make promises to people that you don't keep, or at least I don't. And, you know, a lot of these people are relying on these benefits. So the question that this council is going to determine is, what type of benefit change actually gets us to where we need to be? So my question to you is, if you're given design benefit changes from an actuarial standpoint, you can implement those to see if it can get us to where we need to be so these people have health care. I mean, we've seen what's happened in other communities, countries even, with Greece, and we've seen what happened in Central Falls here in Rhode Island and Detroit and all these other cities around the country. You know, prior planning, you know, as was it the 5 or 6 or 7 P's, as they say. But if we do come up with design plans, we could give those to you to see what the impact is long term on the actuarial evaluations. Correct.
Yes, I mean we do studies from time to time. We're requested to say, listen, we're talking to this union. They're willing to. We're contemplating doing this. Granted, we're going to have to give up this, but that doesn't really count in the equation. You know, they want that to be equal right today, yeah, but ultimately end up making out in the long run. But I'm not going to be able to give you an analysis that gets you down to zero. I mean, if I came to you and said, you know, you have to do turn off everything.
No, you just said $34 million a year gets you down to zero over 20 years, right? That was your analysis.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we can't do that, but it was a good analysis, okay? Just pay $34 million a year, you'll be fine. we can't do that. But as you pointed out, you can change designs, you can change contributions, and you could still, it might not be 20, it could be 30 or 40 years, you could still figure out what needs to be done to make sure that the people that we're making these promises to and the community, that this is a well-funded plan and it's going to work. And in the 70s, I think it was Mayor Walsh put in different tiers. He had the foresight to say, hey, we should have a fire one and a fire two, a police one and a police two. When the pension benefits got out of control and they couldn't figure out a way to solve it. And maybe that's something that this council and this administration needs to look at. But obviously we need guidance and to figure out what we need to do to get there to make sure those benefits are there. And I interrupt you, Councilman Lattiser.
So just for a point of information, I just Googled healthcare costs increases, and the overall cost of healthcare spending in the United States rose nearly $1 trillion from 1996 to 2015. Nearly $1 trillion. So obviously there's significant increases in healthcare that we're pretty much all aware of.
I know I think it was the school department was, I know it was in double digits, at least that's what they represented to us. And I think our healthcare consultant had confirmed some of that. I'm sorry, we keep interrupting you, but it's important that we're all on the same page.
Yes.
We understand.
Absolutely.
Councilman Qualley.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the concept of all of this. If I know it's an accounting exercise that is used to set the bond market, and I'm approaching it from that standpoint. You come from a state that doesn't allow any funding of OPEB liabilities, correct? But I'm sure there are municipalities that borrow money in the state of New York. So if they do that, the bond market is still willing to back their bonds, and I know that there are different ratings, that the more A's you get, the better. Right now, we're currently a AA-rated bond under Standard & Poor's, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's what we are with the liability that we have. I'm sure that there are municipalities in New York that are AA or less, or AA or more, depending on other factors other than their OPEB liabilities. Mm-hmm. What I want to know is, with all of the problems and challenges that we have looking at us in the future, how it is that we, how many, what is the highest bond rating? Best, the most financially sound? How, what is, I don't know what that is.
What do you mean, like AAA? Or
right, yeah, I don't know how high whatever. It goes. Okay, you don't know that?
I mean, just what the, you know, A++ or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm asking. I thought this is not my field.
The bond rating issue comes out of this whole thing.
Right.
That's one of the tools of this thing. Another one of the tools is to put front and center here, so everybody in the room here is noticing that there's a $350 million liability, or at another place it's $2 billion, at another place it's $50 million. Okay, so, you know, again, and I've always supported putting that out there to people. You know, again, you know, you see your police, you know, police have dangerous jobs, and, you know, they deserve, you know, arguably they deserve, you know, all the, you know, great health care and retirement and everything else and stuff. But, and, you know, and your employees that have worked for a long time for you, they deserve some kind of health care coverage also. But what ends up happening is at some point in time, the stuff ends up deemed, you know, one reason why we use those, the decrease in the trend rates, the healthcare inflation rate, is because at some point this is, could come out to be not sustainable, you know, and each city, each municipality would have to, you know, look at it and say, gee, can we continue to sustain this? And it's an individual decision in some cases. And then there's some groups that say, well, listen, let's throw some money at it, and then this way we're going to get some interest that's going to help pay for this stuff, you know, to the extent. But again, then you have to go out to taxpayers or whatever. So it's not an easy answer.
What do you mean by that?
I'm not going to be able to come back to you and get that $34 million number down to $11 million, which is the benefit payment.
Right.
That's impossible.
It
because
is.
That would only if the retirees existed.
Yeah.
Would that work? And nobody else could get a dime.
Well, I was excited about your optimistic approach about what was happening in New York, but I was more interested in the realistic approach of what we can do in Warwick, and that's why I had asked that question, because I don't even know with a significant plan benefit structure change if you can even get to those numbers. And what I'm concerned about is what you just said, which is it's not sustainable. Sustainable means you can't pay for the program. You will reach that brick wall where you cannot afford to make those payments anymore and turn the lights on in the buildings or repair the roads or anything else. And the way these numbers are increasing, you pointed it out in your report, you know, how fast this is happening, because we never reported this before. And everybody's kind of shocked, but they are seeing how that cost is going up. I noticed you still haven't got to the April report. Is it still 352, or are you on the April report?
Yeah.
April 12th, there's another document that we were handed. You were on February?
What does the cover page say for the April report?
This report was prepared to provide management with the disclosures for the City of Warwick, Gatsby 75, for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 18. The report contains results for the school only.
The school. Okay. So that's a separate report.
Okay.
So we did both reports. I'm actually...
Why is this?
I'm visiting the school people tomorrow.
What's the school liability?
School liability?
OPEB.
Yes. I'd say... If I remember correctly, I think it's like 50-something million.
50. And ours is 352.
Pardon?
Ours is 352.
Right.
So if you add 50, that's over 400 million.
Right. Their plan, what their provisions are, they do not provide any Medicare benefits, any benefits that once you reach Medicare age. It's solely something...
Yeah.
That conceivably would help you get to Medicare.
So their design plan is different than ours.
Yes, yes.
And, which is what you were talking about.
Right. And again, and that's, you know, that's significant. And again, in terms of what, you know, what a group is willing to do, willing to, you know, pay for, you know, again, what we're talking about there is a bunch of teachers and people that work within a school, and we maybe are comparing apples and oranges as far as design, but that's why you're talking about the much smaller liability on that front for the most part. Okay, so in terms of things, I mean, you can be looking at retiree contribution percentages, beginning to start them, whether with tiers or whether it's with, you know, put something on and for, you know, payoff of something else, you know, as a payoff to the union people. Eligibility of retiring, having to reach a certain age or a certain number of years of service. I recall that there was actually one change here. If we go near the end of the report, back in 2012, they, if you're hired after 2012, you have, you need more years or more, here we have it here for the uniform, for the non-uniform people. Okay, if you're hired before 2012, you can retire at age 55 with 10 years. If you're hired after, you can, you have to wait until age 59 and have 10 years. Okay, so that's the non-uniform group. For the uniform group, prior to 2012, you had to have 20 years, any age, but that's typical on uniform people. And after 2012, you need 25 years. Okay, so, you know, I am familiar with a couple of groups that have even, you know, potentially added a kicker in something like this, changing the eligibility so that, for example, all of a sudden somebody's got to be, let's go to the uniformed, okay? You know, instead of just, it's 25 and out, you know, they may say, you have to work until age 50, though, okay? So, and if you don't work until 50, you can go out at 25 years, but if you don't work, you know, until 50, then you have to pay something in, okay? So, you know, in terms of extending these eligibility things, again, not making people, go up the creek in one, you know, one way, but there are nuances here that can reduce liabilities and costs. That, but again, you know, again, collective bargaining is not an easy easy game. So, you know, that's where. But here are just, that's just a couple of places that you can focus in on in terms of how to reduce liabilities and coverage for people going forward.
So do council members have any questions? I know we were asking questions in the middle of it. Any other questions? Do you have any other statements that, I mean, you were very helpful. Thanks for coming, because I think it's important that we all understand there is a fiscal cliff. We can ignore it and go over it or try and fix it together. But if you don't acknowledge there's a cliff, you can't address the problem. And the question is, how soon do you get to the cliff? Like you said, it's not sustainable. At some point, you're going to reach the point where if we can't negotiate these changes, then somebody else will come in, another branch of government, and fix it for us.
And again, your point is not lost on me at all, as far as saying you just can't revenue your way out of it. So I think we both agree that a good start is at the design end, to try to see what you can do at that end. But then again, at some point in time, being able to start putting money into trust so you can start earning interest on it. You know, it's free money, supposedly, you know, interest, you know, it'll cut into the thing. So, but, you know, it's something that could be done in steps. And I'm glad that, glad I could share my thoughts with you, and you have, and, you know, we can give some consideration to the extent we can, try to look at some further alternatives.
Yeah, I was just commenting to one of my council members that we learned that we had recently a $22.8 million surplus in the rainy day fund, not a surplus, I'll say in the rainy day fund. And we can raise a maximum of 8.2 or 8.3 with a maximum tax increase. And if you combine those two, they still don't pay for 1 year of ARC payments at $34 million. It just puts the gravity of the situation in perspective for everybody.
Now, just one final point on that. And again, granted, we saw Detroit, and Detroit still didn't even go bankrupt. They tried, and they said they gave their, they actually hit their pension retirees with a few percent. They cut back benefits, but nothing enormous. But, I just lost my train of thought. Yeah, right. But thank you. That was enough. But the idea is, you know, the truth is that, you know, companies come and go, and municipalities do seem to continue forever, unless they might combine or there might be something. But again, we used a 20-year period as an idea, something maybe comparable to what you might see in the pension side or something. But what GASB 45 permitted was to almost charge you your expense almost based on interest only of the liability plus the 11th year, okay? It was almost that you could conceivably do, which doesn't pay off much.
The last point I wanted to make was the $34 million contribution each year that you were talking about as a solution assumes when you make that $34 million contribution the next year, you made the $34 million contribution from the year before.
It does.
Which makes that $34 million payment a little off, because we all know we can't even come close to making that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
That number goes exponentially up, which is why benefit design, new employees, all the things that you're talking about, if that isn't done, then this system will fail. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we need to get out of this meeting. This will fail. It's not pie in the sky. Would you agree with that?
I agree that these plans are not sustainable, and yours is no exception.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, if the pension actuary could come up next.
Evening, Mr. President, members of the council. Next up is Joe Newton from Gabriel Roeder and Smith, the city's pension actuary.
Thank you.
Okay, well, here we go again. This is the pension plan, and we're going to talk about the four separate pension plans. You have a handout, and I'll walk through that handout. But as always, if you have questions as we get to them, we can go ahead and address those. You just talked with the previous actuary about what valuations are. Slide two, we do this every year for the four different plans, where we measure the liabilities, determine contributions. In this case, the big difference is there actually are trust funds with assets and investments, and there is a pre-funding mechanism where there's additional money going in to set aside to pay the benefits when due down the road. One of the other things we do is look at how things change and whether we need to make some recommendations for adjustments in either the assumptions or the methods or even other options if we felt like the trends were not going how we wanted them to. The third slide, we do this every year. There's four plans. There's a municipal retirement system. There's the police and fire two systems. And then there is the old closed police and fire one system, which was closed in 1992. This year, we had the benefit changes from the fire two arbitration. And we'll show you the impact of that. That's really the biggest driver of increases this year. Otherwise, everything else remains unchanged. Slide four. The municipal plan this last year earned around 9%, fiscal 18. Again, this is all ending June 30, 2018. If you look at the last 5 years, it's earned around 7.5%. The last 10 years, which is so starting June 30, 2008, right before the financial recession, it's earned around 6.5%. Going back to 97, around 6.6%. Currently, the evaluation is all based on an assumption that the investments will earn 6.9% going forward. In 2018, there was a larger number than retirements than normal, and we'll look at that in a minute. That and the Fire True arbitration was pretty much the entire impact for this year. If it hadn't been for that, the unfunded liability would have went down in total. So those are really the two driving factors.
Oh, you know, I forgot to swear in the witness. Could you swear in the witness?
Oh, yep. I do. Slide five. So there's three open plans, the municipal plan, and then the fire and police two. And what open means is that there's new hires. Every time you hire a new individual, they go into those plans. We begin to put money aside as they're working, so that the goal would be when they retire, there's been enough money accumulated with investments to be able to pay those benefits to that individual, and that way you can start paying, contributing for the person that replaces them. We have a very good funding policy here. We have what's called layered approach, so every time if we do have a loss, if something sets us back, there's a fixed 20-year structure put in place to pay off that loss and get it paid for and get back to 100%. The other thing we have going for these three plans, all of them, is new hires have a benefit structure, a new tier, that is substantially lower valued benefits than the previous tiers. And so it was, in general, July 1st, 2012 is when that line was. So if you're hired after that, except for fire, is now beginning 7/1/19, I believe, here after the arbitration. The next slide. This is to recap when we changed the investment return assumption 3 years ago from 7.5% down to 6.9%. This is slide six. It was decided at that time to do that over a six, to phase in the impact of those increased contributions over 6 years. And so you can think about kind of 0.1 a year from 7.5 down to 6.9 over 6 years. So we're currently about halfway through that process. I feel like that was a very good decision. And it puts you at the low end of the bell curve as far as what your peers are assuming they're going to get on their investments going forward. At that time especially, you were one of the very few below seven. And that fits right into our layered strategy. So slide seven, for the accountants in the room that really want to see some numbers and what's the plan, how are we going to pay this off? This is the example for police two, and we could do the same thing for all four plans. This is an exhibit right out of the report. And you can see the unfunded liability for police two is about halfway down the page. It's that 40.294 number. And you can see that 40.294 has been split into these different layers. You see the different numbers going across the page. Each one of them has been set up on an amortization schedule, just like you'd get in a mortgage. Yes, sir.
What you're talking about is the pension liabilities. This does not include a dime towards any unfunded health care liabilities.
Not a dime. That is true.
Okay. So it's a totally different presentation than the one we just heard. And
yes,
it does not, there's nothing in your numbers that account for a dime of health care.
No.
Okay.
So none of these dollars could be used to pay for retiree health care. And in fact, these are four separate plans. So none of the dollars from a given plan could be used to pay benefits from one of the other plans. These are all individual entities. But you can just see that we've set up the different amortization structures just like a mortgage, so we know exactly when these will pay off. You see the staggers in the middle. That's that change of the assumption. And those are coming online year after year. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Joe. Could you give us an idea as to how much retirees' monthly benefits have increased over the folks that retired, say, 5 years ago?
For the municipal plan, they've only had one increase, and that was last year, the 2 point.
No. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, so I retired today with a retirement benefit of X dollars and cents per month compared to someone who retired 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, of X dollars and cents per month.
Yeah. I don't have that kind of detail with me, but that is a request I can get that back, because we have the data. I just don't have it with me in that type of table.
But it is significantly higher.
It's not significantly higher, I wouldn't say. And the, you know, pay increases have not been that big the last 10 years, and that's one of the drivers that's going to be why that would creep up over time. Your police fire group, if you look at the last 10 years, we've really transitioned into where most of them are now retiring out of that tier, the fire two, police two, versus say 10 years ago, even your retirees at the time were still police fire one. So I wouldn't say it's substantially higher, but it very likely is higher. That's for sure.
Thank you.
So slide 8, police, fire, 1. Let's go ahead and talk about that, because when you hear in a minute, I'm going to show you the numbers of everything, and you're going to see that is the largest unfunded liability that we're dealing with. It's also your largest contribution requirement that you're dealing with. So police, fire, 1 was closed to new entrants in 1992. Before that, it was either pay-as-you-go, similar to your OPEB presentation you just saw, or consistently less, not enough money put in the plan. So in 1992, a 40-year schedule was set up to begin to pay that off and to put new hires into a different plan. So this year, fiscal 20, is the 24th year of that schedule. The city has met its obligation every year for that schedule. And in fact, we're slightly ahead of schedule. Now, I would say it's the same. I would say it's equivalent in the grand scheme of things. But the fact that the dollar amount's actually a little less than it was originally projected is a good thing. Slide 9. If we stay on the current schedule, that original 1992 should be done in 2035. And that's 90% of the current unfunded liability for that plan. So 90% of that unfunded liability for that plan will be amortized in the next 15 or 16 years.
Are we talking about police 2 or fire 2?
Police fire 1.
Police fire 1.
Yep, the closed plan. Now, that program, the plan that's been put in place, is for that dollar amount the city's putting into that plan to grow at 2.75% a year throughout this process. So every year in our valuation report, we do a lot of calculations, but at the end of the day, we're increasing that dollar amount going in by 2.75% a year. That will continue at least till 2035. Now, as of June 30, 2018, go ahead.
You're talking about 7 people, right? 7?
No, actives. 7 actives.
7 remaining active employees as of June 30th, 2018.
Yeah, but I believe there's about 400 retirees.
Okay, I get it. All right, so yeah. 7 people that are still working, and they'll be joining their 400 other retired people from...
Correct. And this was as of June 30, 18. There's a chance some of those 7 have retired since. I don't have the data for as of 2019 yet. But that plan has a funding program, and it's just now getting to the point where you're going to start seeing that unfunded liability for that plan begin to decline. The next slide, slide 9, because when we're always talking about year-to-year variance, how did things go, why are things going as we expect them to, or maybe not quite we expect them to, this retirement experience, which is people leaving active service and beginning their retirement benefit, was one of the main, was really the main driver in the increase in unfunded liability this year. And which is uncommon. It's very uncommon for this to be the main source of adverse experience. And so I went ahead and put the data here so you could see. So I put for the different plans what the actual number of retirements in 2016 is. This is on slide 10. What it was in 17, what our model was expecting in 18, and then shows you what we actually got in 18. So we got almost twice as many people retire that year as historical patterns, and that actually increased the unfunded liability by $6.7 million at that time. Now, retirement experience is a little bit different than other gains and losses in that sometimes when you see something like this, you're like, well, is that a change in trend? Is this something that we see more of this coming? Retirement is almost never that because if you think about it, it's a closed group of people. And so if they retired, we now actually have less people to retire later, and what the most likely outcome is when we, if we did the same exhibit for next year, it would show less people retire than normal. So there's a good chance some of this is given back to us in the next year's valuation, but we'll just have to wait until the data shows up. But in general, you can see that was 6.7 million of the unfunded liability increase. In the next slide, I show you that the total unfunded liability across all 4 plans went up 8.1 million from 323 million to 331 million. And as you just said, 6.7 of that was from the retirement experience. 2.4 of it was from fire arbitration. If it had been for those 2 one-time items, we actually would have had a decrease in the unfunded liability. The next slide, slide 12, is the funded ratio, which is to say, hey, we have this liability. How much of the assets actually covers that? And we want to be 100%. We'd like to be able to say we have $100 million of liability. We have $100 million of assets. That would be 100. And so you can see in 2017, the total across all the plans was 58.4, actually increased to 59.3. So, you know, that's the way we want it to be trending. All of the plans except for fire really increased or stayed the same. Even Police Fire 1, which is the big unfunded liability plan, did improve. And it's 24% funded, but at least it's 0.2% funded better than it was last year. So this at least is a good trend, and we expect this to begin to accelerate up, to start improving faster than this pattern here. So it took me to slide 13 to begin talking about dollar amounts of contributions, which I'm sure is you guys would have liked to have seen that in page one. It's the most important. You see the different plans. I put contribution rates as a percentage of pay here for 19 and 20. And so you can see pretty stable. The muni plan was pretty stable. Fire went up. That was almost all the Fire 2 arbitration difference there. Police 2 went up. That's further recognition of that change in the assumption from 7.5 to 6.9, but in general, rather stable. So you can see the estimated payroll, and so the estimated projected 2020 contributions, $35.39 million for fiscal 20. That's the year in we're in right now. And so the next slide, I put a projection of what I expect that $35.4 million to be as we go forward. All of the funding processes are built on the idea that the contributions would grow at about 2.75 a year, or kind of how the payroll or the budget would be growing. Now, this year, because of the fire arbitration, we got a little bit bigger bump than we would want, 4.7% increase in the dollar amounts from 33.8 to 35.4. If it had not been for the fire arbitration, we would have went up almost exactly 2.7%. So everything else came in reasonably close except for the fire experience, but we had a few offsetting items there. And then you can see kind of what the rate of increase is the next few years expected, 2.9, 3, 3.1. That's, again, the phasing in of the lower assumption. We're going from 7.5 down to 6.9. So you can see it's a little bit higher than that 2.7 that we want. But as soon as that's done, from 2022 to 2023, we're only expecting about a 2% increase in the dollar amounts year over year. And that's kind of the pattern we'd expect for a few years after that. So this is assuming we earn 6.9% going forward. That's the current assumption in the investments. To give you some sensitivity to that, the next slide is I give that same projection, but it assumes that the markets only give us 5% a year, that the investments only earn 5 for the next few years. And so you can see the unfunded liability still is lower in 2023 than it is now. Now, not as much lower as we want it to be, but it is lower. And then the contributions you can see are higher than they were on the previous slide, but you can see that the growth rate is not unsustainable compared to what some of your peers, you know, if we're looking like 5 or 6 or 7% a year, year over year increases. Here we're looking at 3, 3.4, 3.8. And again, that's if we're underperforming investments by almost 2% each year going forward. So that's pretty much my highlight summary of the current situation. Everything is pretty much on track to the current plan, and the current plan, again, will have the current unfunded liability paid for within the next 20 years pretty much across all the plans.
I had a question for you. what's the actuarial accrued liability?
What is that? What does that
yes,
represent?
What's that number?
So it represents a number that if that's...
No, what is our number?
What is your number across all four plans?
Yeah.
I'd have to add them up. But the unfunded liability is... Where was that? $331 million.
How much?
$331
million. And now you're starting to explain what that means.
The unfunded liability?
Yes.
So the unfunded liability, similar to the previous presentation, is the difference between the accrued liability of the plan and then the actual assets we have on plan today. The accrued liability is how much money we would like to have in the trust fund today to be able to pay for all the benefits that were earned in the past. So for a firefighter with 10 years of service, it would be a value equal to those first 10 years of service that they've earned. For a current retiree, it would be the value of their entire liability because they've now worked an entire career. So you can look at it as a target value of assets. It's the amount of money we'd like to have today to be able to pay out those benefits when it becomes due. Now, just as I said, though, we don't have to have it today because the benefits you're going to pay out monthly to the members over time. And so what we set up is amortization schedules to pay off that unfunded liability and get back on track, get back up to 100% funded well before those benefits are due. Right now, all the plans are using amortization periods less than 20. In fact, a couple of them have there's one with a 7, one with a 12. So we're gonna be accelerating these unfunded liabilities pretty quickly here in the next decade as far as reducing them.
And what's our performance been over the last, like if we look at the last 10 years, I know you mentioned the last few years because we've had good rates of return, but you said 6.9% is what you're
assuming.
Assuming. And over the last 10 years, we've been less than that, correct?
6.5, right.
So we're assuming a rate of return that we haven't received in the last 10 years.
Well, it's not an interest credit.
No,
it's not a CD.
I'm just saying that on average, over a 10-year period, we're averaging 6.5, but we're assuming that we're going to make 6.9. Right?
Sure, and over a 30-year
period. So if you assume
over a 30-year period, you did 8. So we could use 8.
And if we look over a 15-year period and we get into the 2000s, if we look at the 70s and 80s, yeah, let's throw it all in there. But, I mean...
Well, the big question here is not... So the 6.9 is a reasonable assumption. It is supported by historical data.
I remember when you folks came in here and we were up closer to 8.
Sure.
And I was asking these questions. Now 6.9 is reasonable.
Yeah. But what's more important?
Let's not gloss over that.
Well, actually.
I mean, the day after you folks were here, I know a lot of council members weren't here when that happened. We were at 8%. And your firm went up to the state of Rhode Island and lowered the expectation to 7.5. And now, as I had this colloquy with, it was either you or somebody else, now we're down to 6.9. And so, to me, that's significant because we were assuming rates of returns that, yes, sometimes we were high, sometimes we were low, but on average, over the last 10 years, we've been below the rates of return that you folks projected. I mean, you've been with us for 10 years, haven't you?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm concerned about your performance, not what somebody told us before that. And so when we're assuming rates of return that you folks have every year marked higher than what's come in on the average, I realize we have high years and we have low years.
Well,
but it's concerning because that if when you don't factor that in, it comes in, the amount of debt goes up. And so concerning to me.
Okay, so when you're funding pension plans, there is two sources of revenue. There's contributions and there's investments. What's more important, and what the last 10 years has definitely shown, is most important is your reaction. Your assumption is not as important as your reaction. And so, and that means if we...
So why'd you lower your rate if it's not important?
I'm not saying it's not important.
Well, you just said it's not as...
Whether you think 6.5 or 6.9 is going to be inconsequential. What's important is the 20-year amortization strategy that we have in place. And that's why you can look at this last slide and see that if we only earn five going forward, the contributions are still growing at a rate that is very likely sustainable for the city for a while. Now, the 6.9 may end up being high. We don't know. It's not a prediction. Okay, it's a reasonable estimate. And when we went from 8 to 7.5 at the time, there was lots of people lined up on both sides of that. Because at the time, if you looked at the historical numbers, the 10-year historical numbers, were about 9. And so it was 9. We're saying no, go from 8 to 7.5. So the historical numbers are not that meaningful when we're trying to look forward and what's a reasonable expectation going forward, setting the balance of contributions across the generations of people. If we were to go in and use 6 right now, which would be a valid assumption, I'm sure it's in the range, your contributions would skyrocket immediately.
So, because we wouldn't be putting enough in, which is what we're here discussing. But my question to you was before, what was our unfunded liability? And you said, I think, $331 million.
Right.
Okay. And that was for year ending 2018. Okay. And what was our unfunded liability in 2017?
320.
So it went up $11 million for a plan that's paying itself off, right?
Right. We talked about that. So there was fire arbitration and the retirement experience were the two different items.
Because usually when I pay off my mortgage, it goes down, not up. But I was just checking. All right. Sorry.
Well, not if you add on an addition and take out a home equity loan, then it would go up. That's basically what happened.
Well, we can make assumptions that aren't accurate, and our liability goes up, too. Councilman Sinapi.
So you were here for the prior presentation, so this will make more sense than if you weren't. Unlike the prior one, everything right now looks sustainable. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're paying what we're supposed to be paying, and even with worst-case scenario of that 5%, we're still looking like everything's on track to get done, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is there any bad news?
Is there any what?
Bad news? Like, am I missing something?
I mean, as we just talked about, I mean, 6.9, I mean, if we do 5 for, say, 20 years, then eventually, yeah, it would begin to push, you know, these numbers up higher and higher and higher, and we wouldn't be achieving the goals that we currently have. So... I would say there's no bad news, but it's not all, we don't have to worry about it and, you know, not pay attention to it and we're fine, we'll talk to you in 10 years again. I mean, there's clearly something we want to manage here and pay attention to, but I would say a lot of the heavy lifting has been done. One, getting that investment return assumption down to 6.9, which, as I said earlier, you were one of the first plans in the country to go below 7. Also, the 2.75 growth rate that we have built into the model is at the low end. Almost all your peers are using somewhere between 3 and 4. So you'd put those two together with the 20-year amortization strategy, you've got a really strong chance, right? And that's what we're looking for, is to put it together so that we expect it to work. And then that's where, if we get the underperformance, that's when that 20-year strategy begins to kick in and bring us back on track. So. And really, you have that big unfunded liability from the Police Fire 1 plan. And what's interesting, when you get a 24% funded plan like that, the risk, if you define risk as unexpected things happening to you, you almost have zero risk for that plan. Very low risk, because you're only 24% funded. You know, it's almost like the unfunded, where we know exactly we know where we're going. It's just, can the city meet that 2.75 over the next 15 years? But the variance and what that possibly could be is very tight. And so it kind of, you've traded uncertainty there for, you know, we know what it is. It's just, can you meet that? And that's really going to be, you know, the next 10 years. Can you meet that 2.75 growth to continue that? Once that goes away, I mean, you're looking at half your unfunded liability, you know, just being involved with that one plan.
I just had one question for you, sir. Just to follow up on Councilman Sinapi's point, you know, is there any bad news? We're talking about what you expect for rates of return. And I think your quote was, if you lowered that rate of return to something that we've seen over the last 10 years, that our contributions to those pension plans wouldn't be sustainable, be too high. Correct?
Not too high. I would say it would change very quickly.
Right. It would be a significant increase.
Right. Very quickly.
Okay. Very quickly.
Right. Like, I think, you know, the strategy.
You're not here to tell us what we can afford. You're here to tell us what we need to pay based on assumptions, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So I would assume you heard the previous presentation about healthcare, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that balance has to be paid together with your balance. Right. So I assume if we hear them together, that would be bad news.
Sure.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, this is kind of a follow-up on that. Have you done an analysis of what our unfunded or what our future health care costs are going to be for current employees as well as retired employees, and combine that with your analysis you have done on retirement benefits?
I have not seen that type of analysis. I haven't seen
it. I didn't hear what you said.
I haven't done it. I haven't seen if that's been done.
Okay.
There's a chance an auditor or a bond rater would have done that.
I understand. Well, that is what the actual picture is for the future of WARC, because they have to be melded together, because they each have to be dealt with each year. And we also, as a council, have to deal with the fact that our infrastructure, we know that we have a problem with the water department, that the pipes have been in the ground for 60 to 70 years, and countless other pressing problems concerning the infrastructure that we cannot ignore. So all of the payments that we have to be making for retirees and health care for current employees as well as retired employees, all of that goes into our annual budget. And for us to try to make predictions and finding a way to fund that is a daunting task, to say the least. So that when, you know, we like to try to get analysis from people that know numbers a lot better than I do. I'm not a bean counter at all. But I do know that all of these things are the responsibility of the city, and it's a responsibility I take very seriously.
Sure.
That we have the money to be able to do this and fulfill our promises to our citizens without running taxpayers that are overburdened out of the city. That is my goal.
I was, does anybody have any questions? Councilman Snappy.
And so I was going to follow up before. So basically, as long as we follow the plan as laid out for us here, we won't fall into the spiral that we appear to be in with the other situation with OPEB.
Correct.
And that assumes that rates of return are at 6.9% and not what we've actually received, around 6.5 over the last 10 years. And we're not talking about, which I just pointed out to you, that about 15 years ago that amounted to about 19% of our budget, and now it amounts to 29% of our budget. So it gets back to the question I ask you when you come, which is, you're telling us what we need to pay, not what we can afford. And so as these contributions go up, so council members understand, that money's gonna come from someplace else. Forget healthcare, which we can't pay. But even with pension benefits, that money and those increases, the amount of money, I think as you showed in the chart, goes up every year,
right,
that we have to contribute.
Yes.
So that money's gonna come from someplace. And it's great to say that if you stay on track, you'll pay your retiree costs. It's another thing to say, where are you gonna get the money from? I mean, you know, paved roads, programs, schools, what are you gonna cut to make ends meet? And that's the big picture analysis that we really never get a chance to have discussions on, except for when you come, because we're always looking at the tree instead of the forest. This is one of the few nights we get to look at the forest and then figure out how those trees fit into the forest. But these are, you know, significant expenditures. Now, could you tell us percentage-wise? I know, like, police one, fire one, I think you said in your report, was it 24% funded?
Correct.
And a good pension plan is considered 80% funded in Rhode Island, I think.
Right.
Fire 2, police 2, what are they funded at?
Fire 2 is 87% and police 2 is 83%.
Okay. And what about municipal?
72.7.
Overall, add them all up. What is it?
59%.
Right. We should be at 80. I would assume that's not good news. You'd like to be at 80.
True. If you just get a snapshot, I think if you look at where you were in 92 and moving towards today, you're pretty much on track with where we were expecting to be, because you had a zero sitting there in that spot in 92.
If we can afford to pay your schedule that goes up every year, assuming we get rates of return, and the last several years, the market's been incredible. Would you agree? I mean,
the
as far as...
The last nine.
Yeah, what's
so
that?
The last nine. So a 10-year number, 6.5, 9-year number.
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, it's been significant. The market's done well the last several years. Once we take a downturn of 16% like we saw in like 2009, then what happens to our contribution that year?
What likely goes up. Depends on what happens around that.
Yeah. Goes up significantly. You lose 16%. Then how much you have to put in goes up, and where you have to pull it from makes a tough decision. So those are just some points that I wanted to make. I don't know if anybody else had any other questions on pensions. If not, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I think we've run through everything. We'll just go to unanimous consent.
What's that?
Unanimous consent. Ward 1, anything for unanimous consent? No. Ward 2?
Pass.
Ward 3?
Pass.
4?
Pass.
5? 6? 7? Yeah. Okay, 8? 9 passes. Councilwoman Travis.
If there be no further business, this honorable body, I move to a docket session.
Councilwoman Travis moves to the docket session. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? We're in the docket section. Ward 1, anything to docket? Pass. Ward 2.
Pass.
Ward 3.
Pass.
Ward 4.
Pass.
Ward 5.
Yes, Mr. President, I have two items. One is an ordinance. The tentative title is to remove a deed restriction.
Public properties.
The next item, which is going to be sponsored by myself, Councilman Howe, Councilman McAllister, Councilman Marola, and anyone else who would also like to co-sponsor. And it is called, the title is Senior and Veteran Exemptions.
Finance. You had any other sponsors? Have their hands up. Councilman Qualley, Councilman McElroy.
Unanimous.
Councilwoman Travis and Councilman Snapp, unanimous, correct.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, Councilwoman Travis, anything to docket?
Pass.
7, 8. Nine's over here. Councilman Sinapi?
I got one. Resolution extending the sunset clause for the Warwick Commission to review Chapter 4, Animals and Fowl, to March 6, 2020.
Intergovernmental. Ward 9 passes. Have a good evening.